Everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. And we have for our esteemed guest this evening, Mike Dooley, who I will be telling you a good deal about. And I would like to thank Don Newsom at bbsradio.com. And I'm Kate Romero, your host for the evening. We experienced just a little bit of a lag time there after our theme song played, and we're up to speed now, so thank you for your patience. I'm going to read a little bit from Mike Dooley's bio, and for those of you who are listening, if you'd like to pull him up on your computer, this is internet radio, very easy to do, just go ahead and type in www.tut.com, that's T-U-T.com, and you'll see a giant treasure map. Just click on home if you want to begin with, and that'll give you a really wonderful array of exactly who it is that we will be interviewing this evening, and there are no limits to what this person can do. He's also one of the stars of The Secret. So I'm going to read a bit from Mike's bio, and then I'll bring Mike on. It says, for me in the beginning, my search for answers generally centered around the issues of life, death, and the powers of the mind. But within these, there were many other topics like time, space, heaven, hell, hypnosis, UFOs, ghost stories, ESP, the dream state, reincarnation, etc. I had arrived at several basic conclusions for each, but they were just hunches. Without knowing how I knew, for example, at the age of 12 or 13, I remember telling my mother that space and time couldn't really exist, and that neither could hell, or God that wasn't one with all things, living and inanimate. I reasoned that he was not just inside us all, but that no part of our experience could ever be anything less than 100% God. Amen to that, and that's pretty savvy for an 11 and 12-year-old. And it says, after exploring hypnosis, I gleaned several breakthroughs. First, that the process worked. I saw the mind's influence over the body and its thoughts. And second, while rummaging in the school library, I discovered The Search for Bridie Murphy by Maury Bernstein. I have a copy right in front of me. It blew my ninth grade mind. It blew my 50-year-old mind as well. I couldn't understand why everyone didn't have a copy or why the teachers and adults I knew hadn't heard of it. Surely, I thought, this was revolutionary material that should be studied and queried by the greatest minds of the world. But as far as I knew, that hadn't happened since Bridie's publication in 1956. Nevertheless, the paranormal events and conditions described in Bridie made perfect sense to me, paralleling many of my own inner suspicions and opening doors in my thinking that enabled me to ponder even greater questions. There is so much more I could tell you about Mike, but I'm going to bring on Mike and let Mike tell you himself. Hello, Mike Dooley.
Jambo, Kate.
Jambo. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, and I'm happy to be with you in your program.
Wonderful, wonderful. We're absolutely thrilled to have you. And so excited about The Secret just sweeping the country and all of the wonderful transformation that's taking place by introducing these very simple yet complex concepts into consciousness. And, you know, it's very basic for some people, like for yourself, of course, but for some people, it's new information, and I've seen it myself. I sent out an email to all of my clients, being a progressive talent manager with a focus on consciousness. I'm continuously introducing my clients to everything I can about how thoughts are things and choose the good ones, to quote you, mm-hmm. and that words are very, very powerful, and that if we don't realize our divinity and we aren't in touch with our divinity, we won't know our power, and we won't know that the words we're speaking are absolutely causing the events to show up in our lives. So I sent out an email to all of my clients yesterday and asked them to listen to this program this evening, because you know, thoughts are things, and we must choose the good ones. And if we don't know it's an option, then we're going to be stuck a good deal of the time, or just, you know, being lucky whenever the lucky fairy flies over. But, you know, you can live your life quite on purpose. And I'd like you to say a little bit to my clients about that. And they're actors and very successful. And some of them are beginning, and some of them are really, really far along and been at it for decades. So, you know, you're never too young or too old to get new concepts. So whatever your first instinct is about that, Mike, we'd love to hear it.
Well, great, a great lead-in. And I think the secret speaks to the kind of approach that I feel is necessary, and it's really the simplest approach, and that is the first recognizing that in time and space there are answers. We've been raised in a really primitive society. We all chose to be born at a very primitive time for an endless number of reasons, significantly because we're adventurers and we took the dare, so to speak. But once we got here, we were kind of told and taught and shown by everyone else who's only been living off of their physical senses that certain things aren't to be known, they're to be left in the hands of some unknown god, some unknowable god, or in worst cases, some vengeful, angry god. And that has shut so many people down from just tuning in to what their own suspicions are.
Yes.
And if one person does begin their own deductive reasoning and answering of their own questions, because once we formulate a question, immediately we begin drawing the answer to us, what we come to find is that there are another set of principles that rule reality that are far superior to, or you could say carry the trump card to, the normal principles contained in the known sciences. And I guess the buzzword or the fashionable way to approach this is to call these previously unknown principles quantum physics, but not to psych anybody out with a name like that. Basically, the law of attraction, I'm sure because of your sharing the secret with so many people, most of your listeners know about, is one of those principles. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's the most exciting principle because really it's powered by our thoughts becoming things.
Yes.
And I kind of like looking at that principle from that angle, because when you say thoughts become things, you immediately see where we fit into the equation. We choose our thoughts. We have that unbelievable freedom to think anything we like, whether it serves us or not. But not knowing that there are principles, we didn't realize that those choices were actually creating the world around us.
Yes, and don't you also feel, Mike, that we can not only choose our thoughts, but we can also choose our outcomes? Hello.
Absolutely, and that's what I call the end results.
Yes.
Now, focusing on the end result, and that is the clearest way to impress upon these principles, if you will, or the universe, if you will, but the universe to me is really a metaphor for our greater selves, exactly what it is we want. And what most people don't know, they've kind of got one foot in the old school, which is, you know, work your brains out, use logic to get there, and they've got one foot in the new school that says there's these metaphysical principles, yet they don't blend the two. By blending the two, or they try to blend the two. What's required of us is clearly defining the end result, preferably in terms of joy. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then turning over the hows, shutting off that logic sensor in our brain.
The hows,
turning over the
H-O-W apostrophe S.
Exactly.
Yes.
The cursed hows. Those are the domain of the universe. The universe always knows, just like MapQuest. As soon as you give MapQuest an end result, a destination, whether it's in Alaska or Burbank or Key West, MapQuest instantaneously considers every possible road you could take in America to get there. It also weighs in the speed limits, the yield signs, the traffic
mile.
Lights, everything,
yeah.
And gives you in an instant the shortest, quickest, most harmonious way to get to your end result. The universe does the same thing. The instant you define what you want in terms of the end result alone, it knows the complete sequence of events, including players and circumstances that need to be drawn into your life to bring it to pass. And the worst thing we can do to muddy up the waters or get in its way is, you know, if MapQuest says go north on, you know, Highway A1A. And you're like, but no, you know, Rhonda last week went south, and I know she got there quicker. I know a better way. It's like, look, we're only using our physical senses when we try to assess how to make something happen. The universe knows all. And so it can deduce or calculate the absolute quickest way if we don't get in the way saying, no, I want love and companionship, and it must be Mary who falls in love with me. Like, the universe is like, oh, cripe, you know, I know 6 billion people who could fall in love with you.
And
you're using your physical senses, and you're limiting and blocking people you don't even know exist from coming into your reality because you've insisted on a how. In this case, Mary would be how, or Sam would be how, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So by understanding, you know, the big picture is by understanding that there are principles, by understanding that they are knowable, by understanding that it's all within inside of us, we can deduce what the truth is, and better, we have another tool. We can look at our past and recognize it's the thoughts that we used to think that kind of brought us to where we are today, mm-hmm. unknowingly, and we can use our own lives as fuel or proof or evidence of the kind of deductions we can make about the objective principles that exist that can serve us.
Yes, and when we're saying, well, I want Mary to fall in love with me, then you're also fooling around with Mary's free will.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, not only are you asking for it to be Mary, but you're blocking out it coming from friends, family, new acquaintances,
accidents,
your career, or accidental meetings, which I don't believe in accidents, but,
right,
you know,
right.
Random. Nothing is random either. I think I'm going to cancel those words. But at any rate, we do limit ourselves and our thinking and our outcomes by focusing too intensely on it's got to look like this.
Exactly, and that's very true with careers. Whether it's a job or an audition or a particular feature film or
mm-hmm.
a particular director or genre or whatever,
mm-hmm.
it's like, look, define the end result. You are completely fulfilled creatively.
Mm-hmm.
You have wealth and abundance, friends and laughter, international travel, whatever broad terms you want to paint the big picture with is ideal. And then the second step after defining the end result is to just generally move in the direction of your dreams. And that would be going on the auditions. That would be talking to people who, you know, the layperson would talk to, talking to agents, talking to coaches, moving in that general direction, but insisting upon nothing, because we just cannot see the entire panorama. And to begin insisting on a person to fall in love with, or a contract that must close, or a deal or a part or an audition that must work your way, you just cannot realize the degree with which you are shutting out an all-wise, all-conspiring, all-loving universe. So the moving in the direction of our dreams sometimes brings up questions, because people will often say, well, if I'm not supposed to mess with a cursed house,
mm-hmm.
But yet at the same time I'm supposed to get out there in the world and move in the general direction of my dreams, isn't there a contradiction?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the trick. It's not what you do. It's how you view what you do. You are not the one who's supposed to hit the home run. Even though you're a spiritual being of light who has dominion over all things, that simply means you can pick the end result and move in its direction. The way you view what you do is you're not hitting the home run, you're pitching balls to the universe. And the universe will pick the right ball at the right time to smack out over the park. And this way, one of the kind of objectives I tell people in my audiences is, if you want the universe to be able to do all it can with all it has to further your dreams, then it's incumbent upon us to do all we can with all we have from where we are. Not hitting the home run, but simply pitching the ball. The more pitches we throw to the universe, the greater the chances are that it's going to find one quickly and smack it out of the park. But because we're not saying, this pitch has to be it, this book I'm writing has to be a bestseller, this role I'm auditioning for has to be it, we're taking the lighter look at it, like, this is just one pitch. I'm going to do all I can, so I'm going to, if I love writing, I'm going to keep on writing. If I love acting, I'm going to keep on going to the auditions and not insist that any one of them be what the universe hits over the park. And this way, we are putting ourselves out there. We're not in that passive mode waiting for our dreams to come true, because now we've seen the secret and now we know there's magic. Instead, we're giving ourselves something to do, but we can be much more glad-hearted about it, much more lighthearted about it. And, you know, I often talk to business people. It's like, you know, join Rotary, but don't think that this is exactly where the big contract's going to come from. Join Rotary and join Toastmasters and go to the Leeds group and go here and do it all with a light, glad heart, knowing that every single thing you do is a pitch to the universe, and one of them will get smacked out of the park.
Excuse me for interrupting you, but you said something that's so synchronistic, I can't let it slip by.
Mm-hmm.
I have some listeners tonight from the Rotary, and my partner and I, who do quantum hypnotherapy, which is really delving into the Bridie Murphy stuff,
mm-hmm.
With high-energy life coaching combined with hypnosis, we went and did a talk for the Rotary, and several people there wanted to do a session with us, and one in particular is the president of the Rotary, and she has so many projects going on that she'll start them, they'll look good for a minute, and then she'll get distracted and they'll just fizzle, and then she'll start something else and she wants to know where's her stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
What would you say to somebody like that who's really doing all the concepts of The Secret, you know, doing all the concepts of Millionaire Mind and all the concepts of all the stuff? I have that. Just to take a leap here, and I'd like your feedback on this, Mike, and again, I apologize for interrupting you.
No, this is good.
I would like to know how you feel about the concept, because what completely struck me, and I work a great deal with spirit, and if you're going to talk about spirit, this is the radio show to do it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, I channel Marvin Masters, and I mean, it's all my knower, it's all my higher self.
Mm-hmm.
Universe and magic are synonymous. And, not to digress too much, but I believe that this wonderful woman is not looking for a career or to be a philanthropist or to make a lot of money and give away as much as she makes, which is in her heart's desire. I believe what she's looking for is herself.
That's a great possibility, but the first thing that came to me was be led by joy.
Mm-hmm.
Always be led by joy. It sounds to me also, I mean, there could be many layers of things going on here, but to start something and stop it, start something then stop it, very often it sounds almost like messing with the cursed house, because there'd be this excitement, I'm going to do this because it's going to lead to that. And then you get into this, and because you did it not with joy, but because it was a how,
mm-hmm.
then you're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulder. Then a week or two into the project, you're like, oh, how am I going to get from here to there doing this? And then it kind of goes to the side, so you pick up the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And
it metafizzles.
Yeah, so instead of being led by joy,
yeah.
Because then the reward is the journey. And I know that can sound so corny, but really when you really get momentum and you're really kind of moving, and you know, right now, call it blessed or whatever you want, I'm kind of in that place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just do not associate the rewards of what you're doing with any kind of outcome. It's just, you know, the day-to-day dance with life and the creativity and the opportunities you pick and choose from, and by all means, the challenges that you face and overcome. I mean, I'm a creative person now as a writer, and I know well what, you know, a blank
page
looks
like. And you don't
like
to read.
What's that?
And you don't like to read.
And I don't like to read. That, that is a great irony.
There, I think it said.
That is so true. I like to write. I like the challenge of writing, and I like, you know, with my daily notes from the universe, the challenge is to try to say something. You know, I don't just tell people believe in yourself. You know, that goes in one ear and out the other, but I try to lead them down one path and then kind of pull the rug out from under them and get under their skin with an angle that they hadn't yet thought of. And
absolutely.
That whole process is a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And I would like to, if you don't mind, talking a little bit about the notes from the universe.
Okay.
For our listeners, you have to sign up for this. It is remarkable, fabulous, wonderful in so many ways. I'll give you an example of what happened to me after I signed up for the notes from the universe. And maybe I told you about this, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
One night, about 2:30 in the morning, I was working, and email's great because you don't have to disturb anybody to reply to people at whatever hour. And I just had such a craving for pancakes. And I never, ever have pancakes as a rule, let alone at 2:30 in the morning. So I got up and I made from scratch some pancakes for myself. And I don't really like to eat pancakes because they soak up all the syrup, and then you got to put on more syrup, and then you got to eat that stuff. But, you know, it just is, when you really want them, they taste great. And I was thinking, okay, I'm going to put just a little syrup and try to just eat just a little syrup instead of the whole big gob that the pancakes soak up. I don't know if anyone's following that, but pancakes really love to soak up the syrup. So I got my pancakes. I came to my computer. I sat down with my little tray. I was happy as I could be eating my pancakes. I looked down at my plate, and sure enough, the pancakes took all my syrup, just completely gone off my plate. So I'm like, oh, I have to get some syrup. And I saw the note from the universe come in. I click on it, and it said, Kate, in life, we have to do what it is that's calling to us, and you know you want to put more syrup on your pancakes. I'm telling you, it said that. And I was looking around for a camera, noticed that I wasn't really dressed appropriately for a camera at 2:30 in the morning, and I called my mom, and I said, Mom, wake up. Guess what happened? And I told her about that. It was so weird.
That is very synchronous.
Isn't it? And then the little, you know, there's another message that comes at the end of it, and that other message was really the one that was supposed to get my attention. So when you say you need to distract people so you can get them to think in a different way, that's what your email did for me. And after that syrup incident, I went down and saw the rest of the note to Kate, and that was really what I was supposed to get. And believe me, there was a shift that night completely.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's a fun story.
Yeah, and it's true, and it's not the only one. It happens all the time.
And I hear that so much, and I'm as stunned and thrilled as
but you're doing the right
the people
thing.
Who tell me that. And
yeah.
It does seem incredibly
strange. You're living your purpose, Mike, and you are the change you want to see in the world. Already, you were at 11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe you're an indigo adult.
Mm.
I've ever since I've been researching you, I thought I recognize him. I recognize that I'm an indigo adult as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you're familiar with indigo, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Could you define that for our listeners from your point of view what an indigo is?
Well, I think you know, it's been said by many that we're in for the dawning of a new age, I'm not new agey per se,
mm-hmm.
or I'm not into, you know, power centers, and there's relevance and importance to all of those kind of things, but just to kind of encapsulate my definition of an indigo, I think that there is something going on in the planet and with the people, and it can all be summed up as a great flowering of consciousness. I mean, we're at a time now in our civilization, you can just look at this, you know, with your physical senses and see that there's far more abundance today than at any other time in recorded history. And what this has allowed is the ability for those in the Western world, at least, and much of the world, to kind of, for once, for the first time perhaps in a couple of thousand years or for as long as recorded history goes back, to get philosophical and to start asking the kind of questions that we all have wondered, why are we here and what's the purpose and you know, those kind of things. And with that desire to have those questions answered, the answers are forthcoming and there's this flowering. You know, 100 years ago when people were still looking to, you know, put food on the plate and have a shelter over their head, or 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, they're not thinking, what's the meaning of life? How can I experience more joy? They're just like, how can I live through the day or the year or live past 40 kind of thing.
Yeah.
But now this is a total new epoch, and it's been forecasted by different seers and prophets in every religion, the Mayans, even Christianity in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're witnessing it, and along with that blossoming of consciousness that's happening on the planet, that's being sparked by The Secret and what other people are writing and speaking and sharing,
mm-hmm.
there are I've heard them referred to as teachers throughout the millenniums that have been born in different eras to kind of help hold their light up so others could learn from what they have to share. I do believe in archetypes, you know, and I think there's 5 general archetypes, one of which is that of either a priest or a teacher, and those are typically genuinely enlightened people, although still with their own set of challenges. I'm not talking about people walking on water kind of thing, although
right.
That's going to be happening before too long.
Oh, yeah.
But there are probably perhaps more teachers now because the the desire by the masses is reaching fever pitches. You know, religion has broken down. There's no major religion, in my opinion, at least not the ones in the Western world, that have not made a total mockery of their own teachings. And people can't go there anymore for comfort, for answers, for joy. I mean, it's never really been a place for joy. And now people have the time and the philosophical inclination to say, you know, where is the joy? How can I have a role in manifesting more of it, and however I define it? And because of this fever pitch and desire, the desire is coming to pass. It's being manifested by people, if you can call them indigo or whatever, mm-hmm. who have these answers. I think Jesus Christ even, although I'm not any kind of typical Christian, I think I think one of the reasons for his presence at that time was because there was such a dire need for his presence at that time. Right. There was no room for thinking outside of the box. There was just total misery.
And do you feel that Jesus Christ came to remind us of our divinity?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been totally misinterpreted by the churches. But
yes,
he came to remind us that what he does, we can all do. And that he is no more divine, no more special than all of us. We are all children of God. That was his message.
And also, one thing, too, I've been pondering lately, Mike, is, you know, corporations, politics, and church. You know, we can question politics and we can question corporation, but the church is still, you know, and it's all very similar to one another. It's very, and not to put the church down at all. I know its intention is really, you know, it comes from a spiritual place, but there's also a lot of control and dogma involved in it, and people just blindly trust the church, even though it is, you know, in a lot of ways controlling and dogmatic and organized and fear-based, and you know, they'll not trust the corporations or the politics, but they blindly trust the church. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. I think especially historically, that's been the kind of fail-safe touchstone. Okay, let me take it to God. But then what is God? And if you let a church define it, you get into all kinds of rules and regulations, and you are born a sinner, and you're born bad, and you can't help it, and you better repent, and,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden, it doesn't make sense. And I think right now we're at a turn in history where people are saying, you know, the answers really aren't there. You know, my parents thought they were there, and I went to Sunday school my whole life, or mm-hmm. church on Sundays, but I'm not enriched for it. In fact, I feel worse about myself, you know. I mean, maybe they like sex, or maybe they like to have a drink every now and then. But according to the different religions of the world, you know, shame, shame, shame on you. And, you know, you can't win. You're a loser. And so I think while people did turn to church, I think the direction is flowing the other way. I think there's finally a recognition that there is a vast difference between spirituality and religion, and you can have one without the other, and there's still people, I'm afraid to say, maybe even the mainstream is still kind of stuck in the old school camp where it's one and the same, but more and more people are recognizing that even the movie The Secret is filled with spirituality, and that's really exciting, and then the great thing is you can have your cake and eat it too. You are divine, you are loved, you are adored, you can do no wrong, we are all eternal, and we are all just doing our best, and eventually we're all going to get, quote unquote, to the same place, you know, no matter what road we take, no matter how grave our mistakes were, they were always born out of confusion in the illusions.
And those people who lost their way or never really were supported to know their divinity or their true nature.
Right. That's so true and so sad, really.
Yeah.
They were made to feel worse about it.
Yeah, and they're being punished for something that wasn't their fault. And, you know, if you really look at it, there really is no need for forgiveness, and nobody's really a criminal.
I agree.
If you look at it really closely,
I totally agree.
That we're all just doing the best that we can with what we have to work with, and there's a lot of misinformation going on about who we really are. Mm-hmm. I believe that each one of us is love, joy, happiness, freedom, abundance, presence, and harmony. And anything that isn't that's in our lives, we have self-imposed it on ourselves, and we just know that we didn't know we were doing it.
Right.
And what my partner Alex and I are doing with quantum hypnotherapy is actually rebirthing people and bringing them back to their divinity and bringing forward with them only the wisdom.
Oh, that's so fantastic.
And it's so successful. It's just, we just feel so lucky that we get to do this. It's like, you know, the commercial where the person was walking with an open jar of peanut butter and another person was walking with a chocolate and they bumped into each other and the chocolate fell in the peanut butter and suddenly you have Reese cups. Well, it's like that for us. And, you know, I went to him for hypnosis and then I started coaching him for abundance. And I said, what if we do this together? It'd be like coaching on steroids, and it's more than that. It's mm-hmm. just so spiritual, and it's all spirit all the time.
Well, one of the things that's beautiful about what you're doing is not only teaching people that there's magic and that they're all loved, but you've interwoven in that, perhaps without consciously knowing it, you're instilling yet still a sense of responsibility, because I know that some people hearing the kind of talk we're having right now might say, oh, you know, that's just great. Everybody's good. Everybody's going to heaven. Nobody has to do anything. And sometimes people misinterpret my message that way,
mm-hmm.
not recognizing that integral in my message and integral in your facilitating people and helping them recognize their power
mm-hmm.
is understanding how incredibly responsible we are
mm-hmm.
for our own happiness, for our own place in life, and for every manifestation, good, bad, and ugly, that we've ever experienced. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and it's the bad and the ugly, so to speak, that was what was meant by the concept of hell. It's hell right here on earth. It's hell when you don't realize you're a spiritual being of light. It's hell when you don't realize that you have utter control over the illusions and the manifestations before you. That is a sad place to be.
Yes, I agree with you. And also hell on earth is when you have feelings about things that you repress and you weren't allowed to express. And so when you have these feelings and they keep recycling in your life as an adult that you never got to express as a child,
mm-hmm.
then you become the controlling, dominating, and abusive, criticizing, judgmental parent of your own inner child, and you're stuck. You're like an ant running around on a Cheerio looking for an exit ramp.
Yeah, perpetuating it all. That's
yeah,
true.
And it's totally controllable. But awareness is half the solution, and people who aren't aware that that's the way they're living are not really responsible for doing anything about it until they get that awareness.
That's key. So right. And that's the launching pad that I try to take with everybody. It's first educating the people that I write to or speak to that there is this different kind of system in place, this perfect system in place that we can make use of. And when you have that awareness, then the coin drops, and then you see your power, and then you're scared by the responsibility, but then you get your second wind, and you're like, oh, I can handle this, because we are all far more positive than generally we give ourselves credit for, just for the fact that we're living and breathing, just for the fact that we're here. That's a greater feather in all of our caps than anything we could manifest with the rest of our lives, and with that kind of momentum, just being here, because we put ourselves here, because we chose to be here, because we created this reality, then you realize that there's this kind of momentum going in our favors all along. And this is why it's as if our positive thoughts are 10,000 times more powerful than our negative thoughts.
Yes, I agree with you completely. And also, what's going on with consciousness right now, it's almost like people are waking up by osmosis.
Yes, true. And the reason it's happening so effortlessly is because these truths that we're talking about are inside of us, and that there wasn't ever really a God outside of us. So
exactly.
It's a matter of the giant that's slumbering within
mm-hmm.
finally waking up. And then, like the story of the prodigal child, another wonderful story that's mostly misunderstood, in the instant we realize, in the instant that there's an awareness of these principles, of our divinity, of our power, in that instant we're welcomed home. In that instant we're going with the current. In that instant we're directing the magic consciously. And it's not a matter of, well, let's see, I've spent the last 45 years going down the wrong path. Now I need to spend another 45 years correcting it? It's like, no, the day you wake up, you're home.
Absolutely.
You're totally home. You can start directing the process because, of course, our thoughts have been coming things for as long as we've been thinking them.
Yes.
You know, I tell people, it's not about learning how to make your thoughts become things. It's not about learning how to have dominion over all things. It's about recognizing that you've always had it and that your thoughts have never ceased manifesting in front of you.
Yes, and so, recognizing, if you take that word apart, it's recognizing.
Exactly.
It's remembering what you already knew, but you forgot that you knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear the truth, you know it. It doesn't matter if an alien lands in your front yard, comes out, bops you on the head, and says blah, blah, blah. If it sounds like truth to you, don't question where it came from. You just know that it's the truth for you, and something gets awakened inside of us, which is what I feel the secret is so brilliant at doing, is it's inspiring us to remember, to recognize, to recognize what we knew that we forgot that we knew. And that's why I believe it's such a runaway success. And I was got an email from Drew Harriet today. He says to tell you hello and Jumbo.
Jumbo Drew. What a master. Oh,
yeah, the director of the secret. And then somebody else who says hello is Joe Vitale.
Oh, great. Hello, Joe.
Yeah, he's in Brazil right now. He'll be on Spiritual Hollywood on January 9th.
Oh, well, give him my regards.
I certainly will. And this is there's never been a more exciting time, in my opinion. You know, I just turned 50, and I'm not ashamed of it. I'm rather proud of it that I survived everything, including childhood, and I'm having the best childhood that I could have ever dreamt for myself at this age.
Yeah, it is so exciting, because once you get it, you never lose it. I mean, once you become aware, once you wake up, and once you start living it, it's like, you know, you could have an alien come tell you something wrong, or you could have any authority come, and if it doesn't resonate inside, once you have it, nobody can take it.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you a question around what you just said. Once you wake up, Mike, do you think it's possible to go back to sleep?
No. It's impossible, because there's
this
cumulative effect, you know. It's like riding a bike downhill, or I'm trying to think of an analogy as we go. But no, it's just far, far too powerful, and it's far too, in a sense, often hard-earned. And when the light comes on, it's, you know, no, I don't think there's any going back. Not when you're truly awakened.
I really believe that as well. And you can't unknow what you know, and enlightenment is not reversible, and you can't unring that bell. Mm-hmm. If you got hit on the head pretty hard and got amnesia, that might be one thing. But as long as you're stable and you know, you've seen already the kingdom every time you wake up, or the time you wake up, that's the kingdom right in front of you.
Yeah.
And you get that. You finally get, like, absolutely no kidding, that you are in control of your destiny, your past, your present, every single thing, every thought that you think, every outcome of everything. And I'm telling you, I've recently had to let some people go, because I've had them with me for years, and they just haven't been coachable, and I've done everything I can.
Mm-hmm.
So my heart went out to these people, because unless they're coachable and really willing to rigorously look at the ways they block themselves,
right,
then I really cannot help them if I kept them for 20 years or 50 years.
No, exactly. That's the same analogy we had with Mary a little while ago.
Yes.
Mary's got her own set of values and beliefs, and you know, you can't make Mary fall in love with you. You can't make somebody wake up, kind of thing, and it's only when
you
we're ready
to
that we can go. And a lot of people will go to coaching looking for another, perhaps, crutch, or looking for somebody else to tell their story to, not genuinely interested in changing. And
well,
so
I don't coach
people
like that. And what I do is, when I coach people, in the very first session, they get introduced to the God that they are. And when that happens, wow, their whole posture changes, their energy shifts, their face relaxes. Their inner beauty just pours out, because it's been trying to get out for their whole life.
Oh, yeah.
It just pours out.
You know, I thought of an analogy. It's like a rosebud. You know, once the rosebud starts opening, you know, and the flower starts expanding, you can't put it back in. You know,
no, and
it's
the fragrance.
It's too late. It's the momentum, the beauty, it's just things change. And when that changes inside, and I think Ramtha, channeled by J.Z. Knight, talks about the pituitary gland opening, being the physical reflection of, perhaps, you know, knowing more or remembering more. You know, once that happens, no, it doesn't. It's impossible to go back.
Yes, I agree with that.
Now, but one thing I would caution some people, I talk to a lot of people who are really excited about truth. or perhaps they're excited because they saw the secret.
Uh-huh.
And there's often a tendency to think that that pure rush of joy is going to change their life.
No, they got to do the work.
No, they've got to walk the talk. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to do what you know. You have to embody these truths. You have to live it. There's a note from the universe I once wrote that said, "Thinking big, but acting small, is the same as thinking small." You know, because if you're acting or speaking in a way that contradicts what you saw in the secret, you know, like saying, "Oh, I can't lose weight," or "It works for some people, it doesn't work for me," you're absolutely drawing a big X through all that joy and excitement and totally contradicting this voice that says, "Oh, now I'm here and I totally believe it." It's like you can't believe it if you don't walk it.
If you don't have the emotion behind it. And what I'm hearing you say pretty much is, let me see if I can sum it up in a phrase. If you think you're right or you think you're wrong, either way, you're right.
That's perfect.
And it's true. And I want to ask you a little bit about the village, if you don't mind talking a bit about that, Mike.
Sure.
Just to digress slightly.
That's a somewhat new. I guess it might be about 5 months old now or 4 months old, but it's a new aspect or angle at the Tut website.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea has always been, and we're getting there at the Tut website, to make it an online community where there will be discussions, forums, adventures. We're doing a variety of cruises all over the world right now. You know, twice a year we go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a lot more coming. But I think ultimately it's to get to our website will be like a MySpace kind of thing where people can kind of have their face page, have their declarations, share their books, their music, their art, their poetry, and have a little presence somewhere where they'll be surrounded by like-minded people. But in a step towards getting to that, we found some really suitable software that allows people to meet one another based on interest, whether it be dating or just friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have kept it completely free. Even right now it's free. Anybody who joins even still will get a one-year free membership. But it looks much like a dating website. It's got the same functionality, but it has a few more options so that you can find people of a like mind.
Yeah, I've met some really nice people there, not for dating, but for just like, "Hi, how are you? It's so nice to meet a kindred spirit. Let's talk about this," or "What do you think about that?" And I'm wondering, have you seen that feature film Apocalypto yet?
No, I haven't.
Nor have I. Mm. But I have some thoughts about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to run that past you because
I
feel that you and I are simpatico in at least the way that we see the open-mindedness of the universe and everything is collective consciousness, etc. I read a review on that film that the very last phrase stuck with me. And the last phrase was, "If there was a screening of Apocalypto in hell, Satan would give it a standing ovation." And that's pretty heavy.
That's just the old school thinking. I mean, those are the people who believe in the hell. What a preposterous idea that a loving universe would cast its comparatively feeble, blinded children, confused children, into, you know, damnation for eternity. It's just mind-boggling that anybody ever bought that.
Exactly. But I want to ask you this about collective consciousness, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do understand it's a very, very, very violent film. I have not seen it. I understand it's gratuitously violent. I've heard that from a lot of different sources, but I'm sort of resistant to seeing it because of post-traumatic stress is a very real thing, and if there's something in there that triggers that in me, I would prefer to have my thoughts be as pure as possible without inflicting that kind of thing on myself, and I don't watch the news for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
That with collective consciousness, and let's say neither one of us have seen that film,
mm-hmm.
let's say it is gratuitously violent. Do you feel that if enough people watch it, that you can actually feel that negativity in a wave from collective consciousness that just you get caught up in?
I think you're onto something, but I think more a film like that would be the result of a violent wave of energy, if you will, that already existed. It would be more reflective than it would be an instigator of new angry thoughts. And just as we were speaking about, you know, the rise of a prophet or, you know, or the secret being kind of from a yearning or an upswelling of desire and emotion by the masses, so will we occasionally see a creation that is violent or you know, characterized in any such way as being reflective of those involved with its creation and those involved with going to see it. Because however odd this might sound, you know, I think this is really going outside of the box, but I think to a degree the enlightened people of the world, if you will, were partly responsible for the creation of the secret. Now, that's not taking anything away from Rhonda. She deserves, you know, endless praise for her vision and sticking to it and using the secret to create the secret. But I think it's exploded like wildfire the way it has, because there was this huge yearning by the masses that helped bring it to fruition, and that's included by the thoughts of the teachers that were in it.
Yes.
And the same thing would happen with a movie that was extremely gratuitously violent. I mean, there's small pockets around the world, relatively, that that express that way or that see life that way. So I think it's more a reflection of existing tensions than it is something that's going to perpetuate it. And again, I think this also plays to what I was saying earlier. We are all, this whole civilization is far more buoyant and positive and optimistic than we are negative, destructive, and angry.
Yes.
Negative, destructive, anger thoughts, they only, in the end, self-destruct and fizzle out. They cannot carry their own weight. And so something like this will fizzle out and really be, you know.
Well, here's the thing I'm thinking, though, Mike, is that what we focus on expands. And if we are, all watching this gratuitous violence at the same time while it's out, and you know, the masses are seeing this, if what we focus on expands and the collective consciousness focuses on that, then it will expand what already does exist, and it will then become the dominant thing in the ether.
I don't think we have to worry about that, because there will be many, many people undoubtedly who would see it, who would have some of, say, your views, and just being exposed to it, I wouldn't call that a bona fide focus to expand, because if you saw it, you wouldn't perpetuate its feelings. You would be one of the many dead end roads where it would start self-destructing, because you would not perpetuate it. Being aware of something does not necessarily create a focus that would perpetuate it. Generally, what would be necessary, the necessary component to a focus that would perpetuate something, would be a desire to see it perpetuated. And I think that would be a much smaller number of viewers than the actual total number of viewers. So again,
okay, that's an interesting way to look at it. I'm really glad I brought it up, because it's been in the back of my mind. And being that this is called Spiritual Hollywood, it is very much in my mind.
Yeah.
And recently, what happened with Mel Gibson when he was arrested, and you know, the Last Temptation of Christ and Braveheart were quite violent. And I'm just wondering, you know, is there a pattern going on here with Mel Gibson?
Maybe with Mel, I couldn't speak to that, but I think for a long time there'll be smoldering embers of little pockets, whether it's in the business world or Hollywood, where there will be, you know, the last throes of, you know, doom and gloom and destruction, and that is not necessarily reflective of the direction the world's going in.
Yeah, I do believe, I mean, I love that you said out loud to the airwaves that the positive far outweighs the negative, hands down, and I do believe that if they both arm wrestled, the negativity would lose.
Mm-hmm.
And what we focus on expands, and the whole idea is to get us to focus more on the positive rather than the negative, so we have more of that. Correct?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so
exactly.
Is there anything you'd like to tell us about that you have going on, upcoming speaking engagements, or how people can get in touch with you?
Pardon? Before long, I'm going to be in your neck of the woods in January. I think it's the 11th or 12th. I'm doing my second world tour right now. And basically what that means is every 2 to 4 weeks, I take off from Orlando and hit a couple of cities over a weekend. I just did D.C. and New York, and before that it was Montreal, Toronto. Before that it was Vancouver, Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only other city I've done so far in this tour is London. But in early January, I'll be in San Francisco on a Saturday, Beverly Hills at the Tower Hotel, formerly at the Lowe's Hotel, on a Sunday. And there'll probably be 100 to 200 people.
Is that on your website?
It's on my website at tut.com. If you click on, there's several ways to get to it. You can click on Adventures.
And
you'll see World Tour.
Right.
You can click on Resources and go there to the
speaking links. Sure hope that I get to make eye contact with you when you're in Beverly Hills.
I hope so, too.
So if it's on your website, I'll check that. And I don't know if you have time for coffee. I doubt it, but it would be nice to – I just have really enjoyed talking with you, Mike.
It's been mutual. And
yeah.
Kate, I'm sure we'll do more than make eye contact. We'll have to have coffee.
I would love that.
Or some pancakes.
Wonderful. Well, we're at the 7:01 time of the hour, and I just want to thank our esteemed guest, Mike Dooley. This has been just the best fun. I just really, really enjoyed having you as my guest, Mike. Thank you, thank you, thank you for making yourself available.
Oh,
you spoke to the urgings and the needs of so many people tonight that I just want to make you aware of that. Everything you said was exactly what was called forth from you, from the people who needed it. And I do appreciate your stepping aside and allow your spirit to shine the way it does and the person that you are in the world and recognizing that so early in your life, as I did. I almost feel like we're brother and sister and we haven't yet met, but it's a beautiful thing to find this kind of desire from another human who really, really wants to light up the world. And one person can do it. And the more of us that try to be that person, the farther we're going to get exponentially and accelerate the consciousness movement forward so fast that by next week it's a different world. And that's exactly what I'm endeavoring to do.
Well, you're doing it. You're so doing it. I love it.
Well, thank you so much. I'm having a blast. And again, thank you, thank you, thank you so much, Mike. And if you want to hang on for a second, that would be fine. But if you also want to go, that would be fine.
No, hang on.
Give a shout out to some of my clients who just got some bookings, and to say thanks again to Don Newsom at BBS Radio. Thank you, Don, for having this show. It's just a wonderful joy. And let's see, we've got Stevie McKinley, who's my son's darling girlfriend and my soul daughter, booked CSI and shot that a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
And we have William Baffett, who did Avatar. And we have my son, Kaylin Romero, who booked a National Gibson guitar. So when you see that, that's Kaylin in the purple tie-dyed T-shirt playing the guitar. And let's see, what else? Oh, Albie Castro did some motion capture in Phoenix for a few days. Clint Carmichael booked Comcast, and that's just in the past couple of days and what I could remember in 2 seconds to write down. And our next week's guest will be, and you might be interested in this, Mike, is Brian Johnson from ZADZ, ZAADZ.com, which is a spiritual MySpace kind of place. And it is, ZADZ is, I believe it's Norwegian for seeds. For seeds.
Oh.
And this man is truly, truly amazing as well. And lots of light workers out there, and boy, do we need it, and am I grateful for every one of you. And again, thank you, thank you, thank you, Mike. And if you have anything more you want to say, what do you feel an instinct right now to say, just because you didn't know I was going to ask that?
Thoughts become things.
Yes! Choose a good one.
That's right.
Right on. Thank you so much, Mike. I'll be talking to you soon. And thank you, everyone. Be good to yourselves. And remember your true nature, love, joy, happiness, freedom, prosperity, and harmony. That is who you are. Take care. Until next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.